From India's largest newsroom, I'm Arun George, and this is the Times of India podcast. It's now almost exactly 5 years since the abrogation of Article 370, which granted special status to the former state of Jammu and Kashmir. While there is the promise that there will be elections soon in Jammu and Kashmir, there's no clarity on when and also how it will play out given the redrawing of constituencies in the region. One of the experts who had very close dealings with the state and attempted various strategies to quell terrorism there is former RAW chief A.S. Dulat. We'd interviewed him after the release of his memoirs, and we're bringing back that episode today. Amarjeet Singh Dulat was the head of India's Foreign Intelligence Agency Research and Analysis Wing, that's better known as RAW. He then served as an advisor on Kashmir in the Prime Minister's office for 3 years. That period was well documented in his first book, Kashmir, the Vajpayee Years, which chronicles how the Indian state dealt with militancy and its impact on the state. His second book was co-authored with a former spy master from Pakistan and was titled The Spy Chronicles, RAW, ISI and the Illusion of Peace. His latest book is a memoir titled A Life in the Shadows. In today's episode, Dulat is in conversation with Harinder Baweja. He talks about his good friend, National Security Advisor Ajit Doval, and what he says about him in his book. He also talks about Kashmir and whether the abrogation of Article 370 and a more muscular policy has alienated the former state's residents.
You have often been described as a mysterious character from a spy thriller. Tell us about one intelligence operation that had you on tenterhooks.
I don't think that anything mysterious about me. I'm quite well known. And the area where I worked most, Kashmir, people know me quite well. Yeah, there are certain things which you keep quiet and remain quiet for a long time. But otherwise, I think I'm quite well known. When, for instance, when Majid Dar came across, it took a long time for him to come over ground. And you would recall that the Home Secretary went and met his friends, and they were prepared to take that forward. But it took a while, and then unfortunately, Majid got killed. That was a period of stress. So there have been times like that, you know. By and large, nothing very secret about whatever I've done.
So when you're talking about Majid Dar, you mean the talks with the Hizbul Mujahideen during the Vajpayee era, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, Majid had come across. After a while, he came sort of over ground and said he was prepared to talk. And that's when the Home Secretary went to Srinagar. Of course, he didn't come out to talk, but his people did.
I'll come to Kashmir in a bit, but I do want to first talk about, you know, a chapter in your book, A Life in the Shadows, where you write about Ajit Doval, the current National Security Advisor, and how he disguised himself as a rickshaw puller and pretended to be an ISI agent. At the time, he managed to enter the Golden Temple, which was swarming with terrorists, to gather vital information. Which experience of yours, Mr. Dulat, would compare to the one Doval had?
My experiences? No. He's far superior to me. I've done nothing like that. But I've acknowledged in that chapter, you know, I didn't know how to end this book. And then I thought of my friend Ajit, and I said, let's call it Spooks as Friends, you know. And that's the way I've looked at it. That's the way we've been. We work together. We've known each other well. I think he understands me. I understand him quite well. When he was working in the Punjab, what you mentioned, I was not around there. I was not in the Punjab. But yeah, our story goes back a long, long time.
You say that Ajit Doval, our NSA currently, his loyalty is not so much to the politician as it is to power. You also say that if Rajiv Gandhi were to become Prime Minister and ask Doval to stay on as NSA, he would. Can you explain what you're trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is that Ajit has always looked for position. I mean, all of us have, but he's I have no hesitation in saying that he's more ambitious than most of us. And you should be ambitious, you know. That's what gets you places. And I've said over and over again that Ajit has never been happier than he is today with Modi, because they're birds of a feather and they get along fabulously. So what more could you want? That he would be quite happy with anybody is there. After all, let's not forget that it was during the Congress regime that he became the enemy. He didn't turn it down. And from whatever I understand, it was not easy persuading the Congress, because he was known, his proximity to Advaniji was well known.
So he has friends in the right places and he knows how to use them.
Now that Ajit has been in higher positions, after all, he's now a cabinet minister. And I would say the same applies to him, or maybe more. I think given the time, I wouldn't be surprised if he were to become home minister.
So in this chapter on Doval, you talk about his ruthlessness, his ambition, and his proximity to Prime Minister Modi. And of course, their very muscular approach, especially when it comes to Kashmir. The question that you raise in the chapter is, you're not sure where this approach will take India or Kashmir. I'd like you to answer that. Where will they take Kashmir?
I have no idea. That's why I've said it's very difficult to say, you know, where Kashmir will go. But Ajit believed in this muscular policy, and that is the policy which is being followed. And I give him full marks because it is working so far. But where Kashmir will go, nobody can tell. And over and over again, I've said that Kashmir can change overnight, you know. It can change for the better. It can change for the worse. And if you believe in something, I think you should carry it forward. And that's what Ajit has done.
Are you saying the muscular approach is okay? I find in a very sullen silence, it's like, the people feel deeply betrayed.
You see, muscular policy in relation to militancy or terrorism. And there it has worked. It has come down. Militancy has come down. I've tried to sort of differentiate between militancy and terrorism. When I say militancy, I'm referring to our own boys. And terrorism is what comes from Pakistan. And the really scary part today is that Pakistan is in a big mess. And I think the militancy there or terrorism there is out of control. So if terrorism has come down, or if the number of boys coming from across has reduced, it is because Pakistan cooperates from time to time. We've seen that. What have we been saying all along, and not wrongly, that Pakistan is a factory of terrorism. Now, if that factory has lost its ownership, or the owners are not in charge, are not in control, then, never know what's going to happen. And I don't think the parties are fully in control.
And that will have ramifications for Kashmir.
Remember, when the Taliban came back a couple of years ago in Afghanistan, there was a lot of talk about the Taliban coming to Kashmir. And I said, the Taliban won't come. It is against their interest. Their interest is to have a relationship with India, to have India recognize the Taliban, so they won't fiddle in Kashmir. And I don't still believe that the Taliban will come into Kashmir at this point of time. But the TTP and the ISIS are a different kettle of fish. But that could happen. You see, what happened recently, I think that is pretty significant. A couple of weeks ago, or 10 days ago or so, one of the top Kashmiri militant commanders from North Kashmir, he was killed in Pakistan. And so the feeling one gets is that questions are beginning to be asked of the Kashmiris who are living in Pakistan. That you guys came here 30 years ago, some of you came 15 years ago. You're having a good time here. You know, you built houses, you bought cars, you got yourself wives. You were supposed to come and fight. What happened?
Coming back to the muscular policy we were discussing, in your book, you mentioned that Doval once asked you for your advice on Kashmir, and you said your approach has always favored talks. Doval, however, said, now we are no longer going to talk. Where does that leave the Kashmiri? Because that's quite a frightening prospect. I mean, nobody wants to talk.
Yeah, this was just one occasion when we spoke. And he asked me, he says, what is your view on Kashmir? And I said, my view, you know, is quite well known. बातचीत करिए, इसे नहीं अब बहुत बात हो गई है, अब बात नहीं होगी. मैंने कहा नहीं होगी तो आप बेहतर जानते हैं क्या करना है. सो दैट्स व्हाई आई एम सेइंग द मस्कुलर पॉलिसी दैट वाज एम्प्लॉयड देयर आफ्टर हैज वर्क्ड.
Like you were explaining, it's worked vis-a-vis militancy. And, you know, even statistically, if you look at the numbers, the graph is down. But my question is, where does that leave the Kashmiri?
That's a very difficult question to ask. I think, you know, we need to ask the Kashmiri, you know, because, you are absolutely right there. There is a sullenness there. Last summer, I was in Srinagar, and what I heard was quite depressing, that youngsters saying we don't expect anything from Delhi. No. It's not the best thing. Now, let me give you an example. And some people will not like this example, but Rahul Gandhi's visit to the Valley went off exceptionally well. The crowds that came out, nobody could have believed that so many people would come out. The point I'm trying to get to is that if Modiji could do the same thing, if he could go to Srinagar, yesterday there was a PAGD meeting, and the main demand now is not 370, but a staple. If Modiji could go to Srinagar and announce a restoration of statehood, I can assure you he could go around in an open jeep without security and boys would come out to garland.
That's a huge statement.
Yeah, it is. Because the Kashmiri is desperate. Why was it that so many people came out to welcome Rahul and Priyanka? Because the Kashmiris starved for somebody talking to them, looking at them. You know, that walk from Kazikund to Anantnag, I mean, I was not there, but I saw it on WhatsApp. I've never seen crowds like that. And I doubt whether the Abdullahs can muster such crowds.
So what you're saying is currently a reach out is very important.
Yeah, it is important. Actually, you know, the PAGD or Farooq has put it absolutely, hit the nail on the head, that what Kashmir needs is elections and restoration of statehood. If that could happen, then I think we could move forward.
So are you saying, I know you've said this very categorically in black and white in your book, but are you actually of the firm belief that Article 370 is done and dusted?
The very fact that the PAGD yesterday did not bring up 370, but they talked about elections and about restoration of statehood. So I think the Kashmiri believes, the Kashmiri understands, you know, you've been there umpteen times, you know it. Kashmiri understands Delhi very well, and nobody understands it better than Farooq. That's why I say that he's the tallest, by far the tallest leader. Because he not only understands Kashmir, but he understands Delhi as well. He is the last bridge, sorry to say.
Mehbooba Mufti is on record several times to say that she will not contest an election till 370 is restored. So clearly for her, statehood is not the answer.
I once asked her, in fact, this question, exactly what you said. Does this imply you will not contest the election? So she said, I never said that the party will not contest the election. What I said was only with regard to myself, and we'll see when the time comes. The big question, or the bigger question here, is that whenever elections come, and I don't think it'll happen in 23, will the NC and the PDP stick together? Can they stick together? That would be something really big. You know, this PAGD has survived basically because of Dr. Farooq Abdullah. But how far can he carry it forward?
You know, after Article 370 was revoked and the mainstream leaders were put under house arrest, you were allowed to meet Farooq Abdullah when he was still under house arrest. And you quote what he said to you when you went there to meet him. He said, our family has always been with India. We will remain with India. But today my grandchildren ask me, is this the India you want us to stay with? I mean, there is a deep sense of betrayal, which is evident from what Farooq Abdullah said, but it is evident even in Common Voices when I talk to Kashmiris in Srinagar and outside Srinagar. We've heard, you know, how alienated the Kashmiri is. 370 has probably deepened that alienation. Would you not agree?
As far as Farooq goes, he never forgets, but he forgives quite easily. So, you know, to him, whatever has happened has happened. Now, let me give you an example. In 2002, he had been promised vice presidentship. I'm a witness to that, and I've written about it. And he was let down. And before being let down, he told me that summer when I was in Srinagar, he called me and he said, "What do you think Delhi's up to?" I said, "Sir, Delhi's up to nothing." So he said, "Do you think they'll appoint me vice president?" I said, "Of course they will. Haven't you heard that from the prime minister and the deputy prime minister?" He said, "I've heard it from everybody. I don't trust anybody. I don't trust Delhi." He said that. And yet, he never held that as a grouse against, particularly against Vajpayee. And he continues to say that Vajpayee is one of our greatest leaders. Now, how many times has he not said that? I think he said it yesterday also, after he came back from Umrah, that we are Indian. Kashmir is going to stay with India. It's not going anywhere.
But his equation is very different from what it was with Vajpayee as prime minister and now Narendra Modi as prime minister. He does feel very deeply about why they were arrested and detained and called thieves and enemies of India.
And you know, a lot has transpired since 2019, and I don't think any of us is privy to all that has happened. Who has promised whom what and who has said what to whom and who has not said what to whoever. A lot of things have happened. Do you remember that meeting that the father and son had with the prime minister 2 or 3 days before abrogation? Now, their narrative, and I've got it from both separately, is quite different from Delhi's narrative. When all the Kashmiri leaders came to meet the prime minister here, and Modi ji said, "Ke Delhi ki duri or dil ki duri," and the status quo continues. You know?
So what are the two narratives? I mean, Umar and Farooq came away with a different impression, and you're saying that what the prime minister told them is different from what they have actually revealed.
What I'm saying is that what I heard from the Abdullahs was different from Delhi's narrative. I don't know Delhi's narrative. You know? I don't meet Modi ji, and Modi ji hasn't told me. But from whatever I've heard, Delhi's narrative was that the Abdullahs had been warned about what is likely to happen.
Mr. Dulat, again, I want to quote from something you've written in the book, which also I find very interesting. And you're talking about the nightmare in the Kashmiri mind and how it's changed. And you say that while earlier, because of the chaos of militancy, they pleaded for India-Pak peace, today it is the nightmare of being reduced to a minority in their own land.
You're absolutely right. But this hasn't happened just post 370. I heard this at least 25 years ago. A well-known Kashmiri who knows Kashmir. And he said to me, the thing we are really afraid of is that one day we could be reduced to a minority in our homeland. So I said, "Why do you say this?" And he said, "This is our fear. This is our ultimate fear. And that fear remains." Now, of course, it's grown manyfold after 370. Now many more people talk about it. In a lighter vein, they also say we'll have to take up assume Hindu names now.
That's quite sad, actually, if that's how they feel.
I found it very funny, but it is sad also.
Let me ask you straightforward. Do you think we've lost the valley?
This I never agreed to. And Farooq Abdullah bears me out on this one because he says that we are Indian, we remain Indian. And so Kashmir is not going anywhere. Neither is the situation, as you say, irretrievable. It can be retrieved. I mean, it just requires engagement with the Kashmiri. Make him feel wanted. Make him feel that you can talk to him and talk to every Kashmiri. We've made this thing about separatists. So we don't talk to separatists. But there is one poor fellow locked up in his house last 3.5 years, the meanwhile. And he's more than mainstream. I don't know how much more you can mainstream him. And there's nobody else left in the among the separatists. Pakistan's last man standing has gone. So what is left now of separatism?
So you're talking about engagement, and you know, earlier on you said that Prime Minister Modi needs to do what Rahul Gandhi did.
No, please don't quote me or get me wrong. I'm not saying he should do this, but I'm saying that Kashmiri can get taken in so quickly, and the Kashmiri is so lost without any interaction, that if the Prime Minister were to visit Srinagar, I'm of the firm belief that no Prime Minister should visit Srinagar without a political message. At least in the last 20, 25 years, Vajpayee never went to Srinagar without a political message. And when Dr. Manmohan Singh did, I said, sir, I think you're making a mistake. Because when the Prime Minister goes to Kashmir, the Kashmiri expects that there will be some message, something in it for them.
What kind of message would you like him to give?
That elections will be held in the next couple of months. And we will restore statehood simultaneously.
I've always found, and I, you know, you can quarrel with my interpretation. I would draw a distinction between engagement and an election. I think the two are very separate.
No, they're not very separate. I'll take you back to 96. Narasimha Rao was a very savvy prime minister, whatever he did or didn't do. And by 96, he had realized that this governor's rule had run its course. And we had to have elections. And to have elections, you needed to talk to people. Of course, he was beginning to believe or imagine, or people were making him believe or imagine that Shabir Shah might contest the elections. But ultimately, we knew it would be the National Conference. But it required a lot of talking to the National Conference. Because even a person as open and as Indian as Farooq was not willing to do it for nothing. So when Narasimha Rao went and said, if the Kashmiris want autonomy, then the sky is the limit. I don't know who he said it for, but for the National Conference, there was something to sell back home.
You're talking 1996, and now we're 2023. Your book is just out. You have said that you feel that Farooq Abdullah still has a role to play, and he will play it to the hilt. What might this role be, Mr. Dulat?
I've said this many times, Shami. He is the last bridge between Delhi and Srinagar. He understands. I've quoted the Maulana here, you know, Maulvi Iftikhar. There was a time when Iftikhar and Farooq were very good buddies. Then after 96, when he became a minister with Farooq, then they had some rakpat and they fell out. And then you remember 2014, the National Conference lost all the three seats in the valley, parliament seat. And I went to meet Maulana. It was my last meeting. It was May 2014, because he passed away in September. And we were chatting. I said, he said, aapka dost haar raha hai election. He said, hai, par maane to. Then we went from one thing to another, till he finally said, this is God's gift to us. Because he is the only Kashmiri who understands that there is no solution to Kashmir. And Kashmir has best to be managed and carried along with Delhi. And he said, nobody can do it apart from Farooq.
And you feel that's true even today?
Today, there is nobody.
Today's episode was produced by Jairaj Singh, Sunay Marathe, and Anuja Singh. For a daily spotlight on people, ideas, and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We're available on TY Plus, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, email us at tuipodcast@timesinternet.in.